Hello and welcome to Beating the Drum for Biodiversity. My name is Celia Carana and this is your podcast for understanding the importance of biodiversity for our health, our food and the survival of the planet. In our episode today, Louise and I are talking to two incredible women who are passionate about soil. And by the end of the episode, I hope you will be too. So before we get into it, I wanted to give you a quick soil 101. So soil is made up in part from dead plant matter, and that plant matter contains an abundance of carbon due to the photosynthesis that took place while the plants were alive. But by using traditional farming practices like ploughing the land, overgrazing, or letting livestock compact the earth, that carbon is released into the atmosphere and the soil is degraded. So much so that many cultivated soils have lost 50 to 70% of their organic carbon matter, and yet global soils still contain roughly three times the amount of carbon that's currently in the atmosphere. So soil can be a huge carbon sink in the work to tackle climate change. This begs the question, how do we get carbon back in the soil? And one answer to that is regenerative agriculture, or regen ag as it's affectionately known. That's a conservation and rehabilitation approach to land and food systems, and it's what we'll be talking about today. Within this approach, farmers use perennial crops, that's crops that don't die off every year, to grow deep roots and help put carbon back in the soil, or use cover crops like clover, beans and peas that are planted after the main crop is harvested that adds more carbon to the soil. As we will hear from our two guests, livestock movement over these cover crops can be a powerful method of churning the soil to increase the amount of carbon stored there, and in turn improve the soil health and the amount of biodiversity that is supported by the land. Our two guests today are Kate Spry and Charlotte Drinnen. Both are regenerative farmers and educators. Kate has written a regenerative agriculture curriculum, which is taught through a module called The Soil Story, and you'll be hearing more about that throughout the episode. This curriculum is available online, and Kate now has a facilitator role, helping teachers across Australia and the globe adapt and teach this module within their classrooms. Then Charlotte is one of those teachers who has made The Soil Story her own, teaching that to her students this year. Charlotte has also completed the Farmers for Climate Action Leadership course. So that's a network that was started by Dr. Anika Molesworth, who we spoke to in our first episode. So don't forget to check that out as well. This episode brings real farming to your ears. Kate's dogs are going off in the background, and at one point Charlotte has to go and deal with a snake incident. I've included that as an outtake at the end of the episode for you to enjoy. Both of these women are incredible to listen to and are inspiring the next generation of farmers through regenerating agricultural education. Hi, Kate and Charlotte. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, Celia, for having us. Thank you so much, Louise. We're very honoured to be here.
Thank you very much to both of you. It's a delight to be here.
It's a real pleasure to have both of you. At BEATS, which stands for Biodiversity, Endangered and Threatened Species, we're about three things. We're about educating, we're about celebrating, and we're about advocating. And the two of you seem to, both Celia and I, to do all three of those things. So we're really excited to talk to you today. And the first place we want to start straight away is that you're both farmers. And you're both regenerative farmers now, but you're from traditional farming families. Kate, do you want to tell us a little bit about your place and what you do as a farmer?
Thank you, Louise. Yes, my husband and I are based here in Tamworth in New South Wales. We've been here for around about 18 years and we started off very conventional farmers and didn't move to regenerative farming till about 6 to 7 years ago, which was first inspired by going to a Colin Sice Landcare Information Day based here at the local Landcare group. And I was so inspired with his talk that day that I came home here and just started looking at our own place. It just really struck a chord with me how tired the place looked. And I was very inspired once I came back from there.
Oh, and it's Shorthorn and Angus beef cattle you run, isn't it, Kate?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, Shorthorns and Angus.
Okay, so they certainly need to eat a bit of grass. Charlotte, you also come from a traditional farming family. And perhaps a little more recently than Kate, you had a eureka moment, if you will. Talk to us about that. Share what's that story, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, well, thank you, Louise. My family's history is actually very Tasmanian. I'm originally from the east coast of Tasmania, where my family ran sheep on a very dry environment and a difficult environment. 23 years ago, we moved to Victoria, and we're at Waring, which is between Nagambie and Shepparton in northern Victoria. And we run sheep, Southdown, a stud, and as well as a Corridale flock. When we first arrived, we just put the animals out. We had no money. We just bought the farm. No money left. We just put them out on the farm, and they ate, and we moved them when the grass ran out. And that cycle continued. And then I guess it was about probably 5 to 7 years ago, I was looking for something different. I could see that our neighbours were getting a lot more out of their farmland, and ours was just full of weeds. And I was watching YouTube videos by Joel Salatin in America, and it was a light bulb moment. I could see that it all made sense when you looked at the biodiversity and recovery and soil health and the biology in the soil. And I just said to my husband, I said, that's it. That's what we've got to do. And strangely enough, it wasn't long after that that Joel Salatin came out to Victoria and spoke at a town only 30 minutes away. So needless to say, we went and heard him speak.
Serendipity. And Joel Salatin basically picks up the Alan Savory initiative about it's not the cow, it's the how, isn't it? It's about how you farm.
Yes, well, it's really, you know, as you mentioned with Alan Savory, it's the holistic management in particular when it comes to the cow or the sheep or the pig or whatever, it's the grazing management and moving them on after only 1 to 3 days, roughly, depending on your operation, and then allowing adequate recovery time so that the plants are not overgrazed. And that's the key to it all.
And that's what you've also found, Kate, isn't it, on your property? I think you were saying there's so much more ground cover and species.
Definitely.
Flora coming in.
Yeah, definitely. You can definitely notice the ground cover and also the infiltration rates, much more diverse species.
So it's totally a work in progress that's going on.
Oh, definitely. We've found that we've still got so much more to learn and so much more to do.
Amazing. I love that we're all on our own journey in our own ways. So I was just wondering, when was maybe the first point in which you noticed the change in the land after deciding to pursue regenerative practices?
A really good question. So probably the first thing we initially did was just stop all chemical use and allow the ground cover to come back. So with that in mind, I think it would have been 2 years and we noticed we started getting these beautiful grass parrots and king parrots start to come in, and we had all these diverse range of bird species start to come in. Also some perennial species that we hadn't seen on our place, certainly since we've been here. So that was really exciting after the first 2 years to see that and join the dots basically and see what was happening and unraveling in front of our eyes.
Yeah. That's amazing to see or hear, rather, about all of the species that are coming back, specifically those birds. I suppose, Charlotte, is that an experience that you have also gone through yourself in noticing in after the sort of 2 year period,
yes,
the changes in the land?
So we've been regenerating our property for nearly 3 years, and we decided to make that change during the drought. It was hot and dry, and our farm had basically gone to bare dust, bare dirt. We'd put all the sheep out wherever there was a nibble and they'd eaten it into the ground. Now that we're 2.5 to 3 years into that, we've probably seen a lot of species come and go, and every year they're different in the paddocks. We've seen a lot more Phalaris just naturally appear throughout the paddocks, which is fine, but we don't want it to overtake completely. We've planted herb-type plants like chicory and plantain and summer cover crops. Crimson clover has stayed around after those summer covers. And so we're getting a lot of diversity in various plants and self-seeding. At the same time, we get some paddocks going backwards for a year, which is quite unusual, and then they'll recover again. So there are all these cycles going on in the soil and in the grasses, but we know we've just got to live with it and let nature take its course and continue to use the livestock to heal. As far as other species coming back, we have got, we've always had loads of birds, but we have recently seen the red-capped robin appear, and we haven't seen that little fellow for a while. And we've noticed that there are trillers that have been passing through and resting here on their migration. And that's in addition to the various parrot species, mudlarks, magpies, rosellas, And of course, a straw-necked ibis that we absolutely love to have on our farm.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic, Charlotte. And just to hear both of you talk about the bird life coming back really fills us with a lot of delight, and it must fill your hearts with delight. Have you noticed, when you looked across the way to the paddock on the other side, that you're equaling them now, that you're beginning to get where you want to be?
Well, so yes, but no, because they grow crops and they tend to just keep putting lots more urea and other fertilisers on to get them bigger and better. So I don't compare because we're doing completely different operations and they do what they need to do to get their yield and we do what we need to do. But our neighbours have started stopping at the front gate for a yarn and wanting to walk in and have a bit of a paddock walk. So that's always a good sign.
And that is one of the things that I thought was really interesting about both of you because, you know, in addition to being farmers, you're both teachers. And yet, living in the country that you do, it's your neighbours and the other farmer families that are beginning to see what you're doing and becoming interested. I know, Kate, you're beginning to have some of the kids you teach or did teach's families come over and, you know, putting you under the gun to actually explain what's going on.
Yes, absolutely. I always get genuinely quite excited when they have that inquiring mind, I suppose, and I love seeing that in the students when they start, you know, putting the ideas together, you know, especially, you know, when they start seeing vegetable gardens growing and immersing and, you know, it's that real sense of excitement, I suppose, for them in that time. And it's just, I find it such an honour and pleasure to be a part of.
Fabulous. There's nothing like seeing, is there, and actually seeing the change itself. And Charlotte, you also say you had quite a few parents come up to you and start a conversation. And you know, you also need to be respectful because they're farming families in the area. Because tell us a little bit about Shepparton and the area that you're in. It's a very multicultural, you were telling us, I think.
That's right. Shepparton itself is now the second largest area of migrant population outside of Melbourne in Victoria. So we've got a very diverse community. It's a wonderful community. And I teach at Greater Shepparton Secondary College, which is the one large, very large secondary school in Shepparton. So, you know, it's an opportunity to have students inquire, as Kate said, use that inquiring mind to, you know, see what other ways agriculture can be done. And I teach a year 9 elective called A Sense of Humus, which is based around soil health and soil biology. Just 2 days ago, we went global. And I was really lucky to connect with the Lannan family from Livingston in Montana, Barney Creek Livestock. And they're doing wonderful things over in the Paradise Valley there in Montana. And they spoke, Megan, the mum, and the two kids, Malloy, who's 15, the same age as my kids that I teach, and Liam, who's 12. And they've got their own enterprises on their parents' ranch. And that family spoke with my students in the classroom about what they do, and question and answer sessions happened. It was just wonderful, you know, to connect with people on the other side of the world doing the same thing that the kids have been learning about in the classroom.
Fantastic. I love A Sense of Humus. And you also have an expression that is fabulous. You were inspired, Kate, by kiss the soil, was it, or kiss the ground?
Kiss the ground, yes. I suppose the story around that was how I got into writing the curriculum in the first place. I was in a science class one day and it was something to the effect of if we got rid of all of the cattle on the planet, we wouldn't be left with an emissions issue. And something certainly didn't feel right to be able to teach that. And I had an amazing principal and I just went to her and, you know, I said to her, look, I don't feel actually comfortable about teaching this. Cattle are actually a solution to the problem. You know, they are sequestering carbon back into the soil. And she said, well, teach what you know. I was actually at the time doing a leadership program and part of our project was to do something that we felt was important in our life. And I had started doing this curriculum as part of my leadership program. I went out and did that. And I found Kiss the Ground had done a curriculum as I was researching in America And I, rather than rewrite what they had already done so eloquently, I asked them if I could Australianise their unit, add in the concepts that I had already worked on. And they very fortunately said yes, and they were nothing but supportive and did a fantastic job. The Soil Story is their unit, and I just Australianised their unit.
That's incredible to have taken that initiative from kind of being faced with adversity in the classroom of seeing something that you can't teach all the way through to kind of creating or curating a curriculum to help grow the next generation of farmers and people in agriculture with regenerative agriculture in mind. And so you mentioned there that you kind of took the Kiss the Ground curriculum and then further developed it to meet the Australian environment. How has that kind of gone? Like, how many schools do you know have kind of picked it up, or what's kind of happened since then?
Yeah, Celia, that's a good question. Initially, we first launched that February of 2018, it was. Sorry, I just had to think at the National Regenerative Day, which they very kindly allowed me to do. So I was very fortunate. And I suppose we got a little bit of input back there, but then ABC Rural did a story, Olivia Ralph from ABC Rural did a story on it. And I got amazing feedback after that. I think it was in 50 schools within sort of 3 months of her article being written. And interestingly, I not only got interest from Australian schools, but also overseas. So it was fantastic. I don't have a knowledge now of how many schools it's in because it's online and able to be accessed to anybody. So I've lost track a little bit of how many schools it's gone into, but it's been quite a few because I now work with a lot of those teachers about developing further resources that they can use to work with the Soil Story.
Thank you so much, Kate. And we will put a link at the end of this podcast to that ABC Rural story. Charlotte, you're one of the teachers that Kate's curriculum has been, you've been able to use that to a degree.
Oh, that has been the first thing I downloaded at least 12 months before I started teaching this new unit was the Soil Story. And I was so excited to find it. It's a fantastic resource and it's very, very thorough and very detailed. And it's linked with the Australian curriculum. So it'll pass any test by any curriculum manager, ticking all the boxes. So I have used that. Our subject has been impacted by lockdown severely. So next time I teach it, I'm sure will be different. But the Soil Story, together with the Melbourne Food Bowl resources, have really been probably a major part of the resources that I use.
And are you finding that there's quite a lot of take up for that? Are people, are both the kids and their parents beginning to kind of listen?
Hard to tell. I had some visitors into my class the other day to listen to the family from Montana, and they weren't students that were currently in the class. And afterwards I said, what class was that? How come I didn't get into that class? I want to learn more about that. So there was a lot of inquiry and enthusiasm about that. And then there's one particular student in my class who some weeks ago, the penny dropped with him early on, and he said, why haven't farmers been doing it like this all along? And I didn't quite know how to answer that because it's such a deep question and there are so many facets of the answer that it's not just a straightforward answer. So, look, it's hard to tell. You don't know with year nines particularly what's going in and what's not going in. And it could be some months later that they say something when you know, you realise you have made a difference or something you've said or taught them has made an impact. But at the time, you don't know. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Inspire the next generation and see where the seeds land and how they grow. And I know, Kate, you mentioned when you were kind of back teaching and having that experience with the children of going from having that like really, really hard soil and the moment when it kind of moved in their minds.
Yeah, that for me is that aha moment when you can see when they start to get it, when they say things like, as Charlotte's students said, well, why haven't we been doing this for years? For me, when I started talking about the regenerative practices of Aboriginal Australians and how they were our first true regenerative farmers, and it was really interesting. Students then felt, that's a bit how my grandfather used to farm, and we encouraged them to hear those stories. And you know, then they would go home and talk to their parents about that at night. And I just loved hearing that feedback and for them to have some understanding and a family connection to that.
Amazing. Charlotte, is that something you've experienced as well?
Yes. Well, I was just thinking further while Kate was speaking about an experience at school when I first started this unit. And one of the first activities I did with the students was actually dig up the school grounds. And so we got the shovel and we went out. I found three different places. The front lawn, which wasn't too bad because the only thing that really walks over that or drives over that is the ride-on lawnmower. And it was middle of winter, so it was pretty mushy. So we dug that up and we found that it consisted of probably three or four species of plants, and there were one or two earthworms underneath it. Then we went off to an area outside some classrooms, which was very compacted. It was hard clay and it was only growing capeweed. We could only get down about 2 inches, and that was it, and there was nothing, no sign of life in it. And that gets regularly sprayed as well, that area. So that was pretty interesting with herbicide. And then I took them into the raised garden beds. Occasionally a child might run in there when they're trying to get a ball out or something. And there's a lot of different plants in the garden beds. I got the students to go in there with the shovel and dig it up. And the shovel just went through like butter, straight into this beautiful ground that had not been compacted. And they dug it up and there were spiders and worms, and it was so beautiful quality of soil. It was friable, you know, it was just that beautiful, beautiful soil. And they could just see, looking at those three samples of soil and feeling it and digging it themselves, the differences in how management of different patches can make such a difference in what you end up with as far as a living earth.
Yeah. And I suppose there's that connection as well between your healthy soils and healthy humans, and getting children to understand that connection. Kate, was that your intention as well when putting together the curriculum, is fostering those discussions?
Definitely. You know, I've said that from day one with this: healthy soils foster healthy humans, basically, and vice versa. You know, if we're in connection with the soil, then there will be that healthy and abundant life. So, you know, things like glyphosate go through our system, and we've got to be aware of that when we're growing vegetables and when we start garden beds, when as teachers and we're starting those garden beds and those compost patches, you know, we can be explaining that to the students that, you know, if we're not using chemicals, then, you know, we've got a great head start. So that's something I'm always making them aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember reading Rachel Carson's book, A Silent Spring, and it was all about the use of pesticides and how it gets into the food chain and the impacts of that. And actually the extracts of that book were kind of published in the New York Times back in the 60s. And that was a transformational piece looking at the effect of pesticides on biodiversity and the health of the plants and the species, and then feeding on from that the health of humans. So it's all linked together. And I suppose another reason on top of that to stop using pesticides and herbicides is the cost as well. So like the regenerative practices that you guys are using makes economic sense. Is that something that you're finding?
Absolutely. It's not just the herbicide and the pesticide cost. It is a whole restructure of a more holistic way of farming, I suppose. You know, we were breeding bulls at the time and they were very much in that monoculture. We would rotate oats and then you'd have the hay in the paddock. So we were outsourcing hay. We were buying in the oats, then we were spraying out all the paddocks, and then we were buying cattle feed as well on top to keep them topped up. That has all gone. We don't do any of that anymore. We don't put any chemical cost back into the place. Every now and again, we'll buy some hay, certainly, especially on those, you know, those harder years with the drought and so forth. That would be our only cost nowadays, though. So we've gone from essentially having these huge input costs to next to, well, not none, but we've got substantially less input costs than what we did initially. So that in itself is a huge win, and it's a huge win for regenerative farming.
It's a huge win. The need to actually share this story is so important because, you know, from huge input costs and money going out the door, you're now almost down to a kind of almost a self-sustaining business. Unfortunately, we've got some key Australian figures in the regenerative movement, you know, so we're not all talking about necessarily Alan Savory, but there are three very powerful Australians, I think, that you reference.
Yes, definitely. I think Charles Massey was the first one in there. What I was doing there was just reading some of the stories from his Call of the Reed Warbler, just so students got a bit of an understanding. And some of it, you know, some of it did go over their head, I'll be honest. It was a little bit difficult, but for certainly for those older years and speaking back to high school teachers, those students could really understand. And it was great to hear those stories of how regenerative farmers were working. And that is a phenomenal book. And then we went to Bruce Pascoe's work, The Dark Emu, and to introduce that with Aboriginal Australians and how they first started farming regeneratively. And well, they were doing it for thousands and thousands of years before we colonised here. So, you know, I used Charles Massey's work and then Bruce Pascoe's work to show the before and now, and you know how essentially there are certainly similarities in that. So yeah, it's really great. There's some phenomenal Australians out there doing great things, and it's fantastic to showcase the things that they're doing.
Absolutely, we love to celebrate the successes that we're seeing here in Australia. So we've spoken quite a bit about kind of all the stuff that's been going on over the last few years. And I wondered now if we kind of take a little bit of a look forward. So I suppose from your perspective, Kate, do you are you still getting contacted by these teachers and how do you see it moving forward?
Thanks, Celia. Yes, look, still getting in contact. Actually, I just had a message probably 2 hours ago from a teacher in Tasmania. So I still get, you know, they still message me and asking me questions, which I love. So I suppose I see more my role now as a facilitative role, and I really enjoy having that contact and hearing about, you know, the things they're doing. Last week I spoke to a teacher in Wagga, and just, wow, the things that they've done and the offshoots. So they've used the soil story. And a bit like what Charlotte's done, you know, she's gone and developed her own unit now. So they use the soil story initially, and now they've gone and developed their own units. And I love hearing those stories from different teachers. Probably going forward, I think Charlotte and I have discussed it before, but probably one of our, you know, a little bit of our bugbear has been with the Australian curriculum, rather, is that word of sustainability. And I personally would love to see that. And I'm sure all the teachers out there teaching regeneratively would love to see that. That word change in the curriculum, that would be a great hope of mine. So we change from sustainable, which in, you know, is status quo, maintaining status quo, staying the same. Love to see us move away from that and start talking about regenerative concepts, rejuvenating soil, regenerating soil, rehabilitating soil. So, you know, just so that we can see that progression of what's happening. So we've had that sustainability movement. Let's move towards the regenerative and rehabilitation.
Amazing. I love that. We're not looking to sustain the status quo, and we're looking to regenerate. So that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that, Kate. And Charlotte, from your perspective, what's kind of coming next for you in on this journey, either personally on the farm, but also in the teaching that you're doing?
Oh, look, I echo everything that Kate has just said, completely 100%. We also have a good little Facebook group for regenerative educators. So it's good to connect, and you probably never meet them in person, but, you know, we have a little community of regenerative teachers, and it's great to bounce ideas off each other and share resources and that sort of thing. For me next, as a teacher in my school next year, I'll be teaching Year 11, the VCE Unit 1 and 2 Agriculture and Horticulture subject. And I was delighted to read in that curriculum, that in the study design, that there are definitely mentions of regenerative agriculture within it as optional paths to take. So I'll be presenting all facets of different types of approaches to agriculture and horticulture to the students next year. And working out how I can present it in such a way to get them thinking, what if, and I wonder what it would be like, what would we like to see, how would I be healthier, all those sorts of aspects in relation to choosing ways to produce food and fibre in this country.
So fabulous, ladies, really, just really impressed. We are delighted at Beats to be able to celebrate what you're doing and to advocate for you. We really are. And Celia, over to you to bring us to a close, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the Beats, our work is broken down into kind of three key areas: things that we think about, things that we feel, and things that we do. And so I'd like to wrap up this conversation by kind of posing those questions to you both. What are you thinking currently of the current situation, and where could someone go to find out more information in terms of feel? How do you feel about the current situation? Are you in relation to climate change and also not sustainability, but regeneration? And do you feel like we're on the right path? And then in terms of do, what can we all do about it? So maybe if I start with you, Kate, your think, feel and do for our audience.
Yes. Thank you both. Firstly, both thank you, Louise and Celia, for having us here today. And to Charlotte for your amazing input. I've loved being on here, and it's a great network that we can all be around one another, and it's your inspiration, your own group. So thank you. Look, if I'm going to think, I want to think regeneratively. I don't want to think sustainably. I don't want to maintain status quo, as I just said. So start thinking regeneratively, rejuvenation, rehabilitation to the land. It's not too late. You know, let's look at this as an opportunity to turn that around and be a part of that. And I think that could be exciting times for us. So think regeneratively and feel. I was just going to say, look, get out into the soil and feel it. What's going on? What's happening in the soil? Is it compacted? Is there any, what's happening with the microbial activity? So just feel the soil. What's going on? What's happening there? Start analysing it, what you can feel there, basically. And do, I would just say, get amongst it, get into it and start growing some veggies.
Amazing. And Charlotte?
My think would be for everyone to have a think about how regenerative agriculture can help reverse climate change and get rid of the legacy load in our atmosphere. It can do that, done the right way. What I feel is an emotion. I feel hopeful that farmers will continue to be curious and to educate themselves, or to at least open themselves up to education that's provided in their community, to research and to change their practices so that they can continue to assist with getting the carbon down into the soil where it belongs. What can people do and what can I do? Well, I'm going to continue with my journey on my farm. I'm going to continue educating young people, and I'm going to work towards doing more in my community. I've just completed a Farmers for Climate Action Leadership course where I promised I would do more, so I have to take action on that. And for other people, what can they do, particularly any listeners who are in the city areas and are perhaps feeling geographically distanced? What you can do is you can support regenerative farmers and buy their produce either directly from the farm website or Facebook page, or in outlets where that produce is being distributed.
I hear you have a drama going on your front veranda with your cat and a snake having a fight and your daughter having a trouble. Do sort it out. Don't worry about us, Charlotte. We are perfectly happy for you to go and deal with the snake.
Well, thank you. I might just go and have a peep and see what's going on, but I'm not going out there.
I'm very happy to be able to report that Charlotte's kitten and daughter managed to escape the brown snake. So thank you very much, Kate and Charlotte, for this wonderful conversation. And thank you also to our listeners for listening in again. For more information on the soil story and the other resources mentioned in this episode, go and check out the show notes. And for everyone who's a city dweller, make sure that you follow Charlotte's advice and try and source your food from farms that are practicing regenerative agriculture. You can really have an impact. For more great conversations, please click that subscribe button. And while you're there, if you can rate and review the podcast, we'd be really grateful. It goes a really long way to help spread the word. To keep up to date on everything that's going on with The Beats, the charity that sits behind this podcast, then head on over to our website at thebeats.org or follow us on Instagram at thebeats_org. Now for the credits. This podcast was produced and edited by me, Celia Kavana. Our amazing podcast cover art and music was created by Vinod Rao. Full credit and license information for the original sounds used can be found on our website. And that's it, you've made it to the end. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.